broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
If I was down there, and those are my people down there.
It was just, you know, clear. That was it. No talk. He was suspended.
They understand that this bill is going to bankrupt this country.
What was the emergency? Yeah, I just tried to kill my mom.
Call me naive.
George Bush still doesn't care about
children.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show, every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the news, talk, and entertainment show, and knows what it's talking about, where truth is our bitch, and where we go through the looking glass to take you places other talk shows cannot go. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. We'll tell you what President Bush says when what he says was the worst moment of his presidency. President Bush's book, his memoirs, if you will, due out this month. And today it was released. People Magazine had it, a few others. The president commenting on what the lowest point for him was in his presidency. Pop star Pink says parents should beat their kids. And a dead candidate wins election in California. And, you know, I don't know why that's news, but it's always it always is in the news, isn't it, that a dead guy wins.
Every time there's at least one dead man.
Why is that? I mean, I could say that people are stupid. I could say that I don't know why it is, but every year or every time they have an election, a dead man winds up winning somewhere.
Yeah, but what do they do when a dead man's there?
They got to do it again, man. Are they the second place vote? I don't know what it is. 877-876-PHIL, Phil Hendry here in our news hour with Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard, ex-President George Bush. Kanye West calling me racist, my worst moment. And I guess there's some cynical people out there. Oh, yeah, sure. I believe him. You know, I would believe it if anybody said it. I mean, it's my worst moment. But we got so many cynical people in this country, you know, that anything that Bush says has got to be lying. Kanye West is at this. I wonder if that was a lie, why would he lie about that?
Well, I mean, you know, like, you could say the worst moment he had was when he, like, the worst moment he had was when, Nelson Mandela touched him, you know, because he didn't want a black man touching him. But he ain't going to say that. He's going to say that Kanye West called him racist.
Yeah, are you kidding me? You think that he's going to say that's the worst time?
I don't know, but I mean, he could say that.
Oh, get out of here, man.
I'm just saying.
I'm sure the worst moment of my presidency is when Nelson Mandela touched me.
Yeah, I'm just that'd be bad. What if he said that?
Then he would be a racist, I guess. Anyway, Kanye West is at the center of one of President Bush's worst moments in office. Former President George W. Bush, the 43rd president, conducted a sit-down interview with the Today Show's Matt Lauer to kick off the promotional tour for his autobiography about his years in the White House. Decision Points hit stores on November the 9th and covers topics such as 9/11 and his campaign for the office of President of the United States of America. Bush reveals what he described in the book as the worst moment in his presidency, being called a racist by singer Kanye West. I was a big fan until that moment, and when he said that, no, he didn't say it. He said, I resent it. It's not true. It was one of the most disgusting moments in my presidency. The remark, which Bush said he did not actually witness but heard about later, occurred during a telethon for Hurricane Katrina victims. West had taken the stage. And, well, this is what he said.
If I was down there, and those are my people down there, so anybody out there that wants to do anything that we can help with the setup, the way America is set up to help the poor, the black people, the less well off as slow as possible. I mean, this is Red Cross is doing everything they can. We already realize a lot of the people that could help are at war right now, fighting another way, and they've given them permission to go down and shoot us. George Bush doesn't care about black people.
Wow. Anyway, in an interview with a Houston hip-hop station, West responds to President Bush saying the comments at the telethon was the most disgusting moment of his presidency.
I definitely can understand the way he feels to be accused of being a racist in any way, because the same thing happened to me, you know, where I got accused of being a racist. And with his, it was a lack of, with both situations, it was basically a lack of compassion that America saw in that situation. You know, with him, it was a lack of compassion with him not rushing, you know, him not taking the time to rush down to New Orleans. But nonetheless, you know, I think we're all quick to pull like a race card in America.
I guess that's the closest he's going to come to.
Yeah, saying sorry.
Yeah. Anyway, the president said, my record was strong, I felt, when it came to race relations and giving people a chance, he told Lauer. Now Kanye West responded, and we just played that clip for you. West, by the way, was accused of racism after his outburst at the MTV Video Music Awards when he interrupted Taylor Swift's acceptance speech last year. And by the way, Taylor Swift's new album has sold almost 2 million, a million and a half, something like that.
Well, not 2 million, like a million point oh three.
I get it, bud. About a million plus.
Yeah.
A million point oh three.
A million point oh four oh oh four seven oh oh.
What does that mean?
What does that mean, man?
A million point 4700.
What is a million point 4700? Okay, so that's a million and a half.
No, it's a million point 04700.
You mean 1,047,000.
Is that how you say it?
Yes, that's how you say it. Wow.
Well, I don't know. I'm only used to seeing it when they put a dot in it.
Yeah, I got your dot.
Yeah, put a dot on your head, man.
You don't know how to say it neither.
Yeah, I do. 1,047,000, like he said.
It's a million. Do you know how to read actual numbers, or do you have to read it the way the newspapers do it?
What do you mean?
1,047,000, all that crap.
Yeah, I do, sort of.
No, you don't. What is that? That number right there, 1,047. What is that?
1,047,000.
No, it is not 1,047,000. 1,047,000 would be a million and a half almost. That would be a million. It would be a 1,470,000. That's what that would be. That's not what that is.
1,047,000.
1,047,000. Okay, what does that mean?
1,047,000. I don't know.
I know you don't know. Don't be grabbing a copy and telling me what the number is. 1,047,000. With that zero, that's 47,000.
Yeah, man, with the 4700, that's 470,000, you idiot. God, man. Lord, Lord, man, the day to come.
Shut up. Sing me a spiritual, why don't you?
Why, you dirty...
All right, okay, watch it, watch it. What's with that spiritual stuff?
Oh, he's like, Lord, Lord. Oh, Lordy.
Shut up, man, I swear to God.
Oh, Lord, Lord, Lord. I hope that they...
Guys, take it outside, okay?
Take it outside.
The former president also addressed his often examined reaction when told of the attacks on the World Trade Center. Now, this is a good one. You know, everybody is a genius. Oh, wow, he didn't react right away. He didn't seem to care. He wasn't surprised. He knew it was coming, you know. The former president addressed his often examined reaction when told of the attacks on the World Trade Center on the 11th of September 2001. Bush, who was sitting with a class of grade school kids in Florida that morning, later was ridiculed by many in the media for not reacting more forcefully and leaving the room immediately after being told of the deadly crashes. I was listening to children read a book, he said, and Andy says a second plane has hit the World Trade Center. America's under attack. The 64-year-old said his first reaction was anger, but with cameras and the press in the room, he feared making a big show would only inspire fear. I made the decision not to jump up and create a chaotic scene. It clarified to me that people were going to be watching my reaction. And I'd had enough experience as a governor of Texas during some disasters to know that the reaction of the leader is essential in the first stage of any crisis. Now, why can't people accept that? Because he said that at the time. He also said, I was in front of children. Little kids are reading me a book. You're going to jump up and run out of there, scare the hell out of the kids? Now, what was the reaction of a human being, a man, a father, you know, and a president was ridiculed. The people that critiqued Bush during those periods, they were the smallest of the small. These people sounded like little people. They sounded like, I would have loved to have seen all of these cats that were laying criticism on Bush. Wouldn't you love that, man? One of them jumping up and running out of there, wetting his pants.
Yeah, probably like the Chris Matthews and everything.
Chris Matthews? Boy, that voice of his, man, he'd be up around 10K. Just, you'd be bleeding from the nose listening to him. So anyway, it's in the George Bush book called I Hated Every Minute of It, My Presidency, coming out on November the whatever. No, it's called Decision Point, some jazz. Doesn't matter, but it's going to be a book that I'm quite sure will be discussed and... you know, what are you going to do? Discussed and misinterpreted. 877-876-PHIL. Pink offers some interesting parenting advice. Plus, a dead candidate is elected in California. Not that that just only happens in California. That happens in every state of the union, every election. 877-876-PHIL.
Phil Hendry.
Lord!
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
And our website is philhendryshow.com. Get a backstage pass. Watch as well as listen. Listen to our archives. Listen to the daily podcast. Get the classic Phil podcast. We're expanding our video capabilities. We are going to be logging as well as turning into downloads every single solitary archive piece of material that we have or will eventually have. We have, right now, the largest repository of any single radio show anywhere in the world. Do I know that for sure? No, but I'm willing to bet, because there ain't nobody that runs a radio website like we do, period. We got a great archive. Go over there, get a backstage pass, and start to recognize what our great, at least what this great show is all about. I was going to say our great industry.
Well, it ain't a great industry.
Well, it's a great industry. It's just, it's a, anyway. Democrat Jenny Oropeza won re-election as a state senator in California, but the implications of her victory Tuesday won't be known for some time. Oropeza, age 53, died 2 weeks before the election from a blood clot after the poor woman was battling cancer. But the incumbent remained on the ballot, winning by a decent margin, 58% to 36%, over Republican John Stamerike. Democrats continued to ask voters to check Oropeza's name on the ballot after her death through mailers. Some Republicans filed a complaint that the mailer was an attempt to illegally influence voters. The Democratic mailer suggested that Republicans were trying to capitalize on the situation. The Republicans are trying to take unfair advantage of Jenny's tragedy, said the mailer, without mentioning Oropeza's death. They suggest that voting for Jenny will only result in a costly special election. I am asking you to vote for Jenny Oropeza. If a special election is called in a few months, you'll have the chance to thoughtfully elect your senator for a new four-year term. What is that nonsense? You know, we're in the middle of a very serious situation. I'm very sorry that the lady died. Why don't you just let people vote the right way? She's dead, so it would not be a good idea to vote for her. Thank you, the Democratic Party of California. So I encourage people to vote for her. Democrats likely hope that at least they would get the chance to nominate a new Democratic candidate. And that's likely what will happen, according to Channel 5 KTLA here in Los Angeles, saying Oropeza's seat will be declared vacant and the special election will be called in December. At the time of this posting, CNN had not been able to reach the California Democratic Party for comment because they closed the door and locked up, having won all the really cool races, and they don't care which ones they butchered up. It's not the first time a deceased candidate has won an election against an opponent. No, really? The late Missouri Governor Mel Carnahan collected enough votes to beat Republican incumbent John Ashcroft for his U.S. Senate seat in 2000. The popular governor died in a plane crash on the 16th of October 2000. By that time, it was too late to remove Carnahan's name from the ballot. His wife, Jean Carnahan, was appointed to a seat and served 2 years before losing in a special election. Sometimes these things are seen as memorials, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, everybody, you're saying I got to get going with it. What are you talking about?
Well, I mean, they see these, well, you know, the decent thing to do. You know, we got places to go and people to see. I mean, this is a very, very, it's a time where, these are not normal times, okay? I'm very sorry to hear about Jenny. Yeah, she's dead, but could you vote? No, could you just get her name off the ballot, okay? Well, that's not respectful. What are we doing here, huh? What are we playing, hopscotch, or are we voting for somebody to be our representative? Which is it? Because if it's hopscotch, just let me know, and I'll go home and get my hopscotch chalk. If it ain't, if we're actually voting for somebody, let's do that. We don't understand. She's a... Here is a story now about Pink. Now, what happened to Pink, man? You were a big Pink fan, Robert.
Yeah.
What's wrong with that? I thought Pink was great.
I like Pink. I liked her.
What are you guys? Are you kidding me? Cheer in my Mercedes-Benz. I'm coming up.
Shut up, man. God.
She doesn't sing that bad, man.
Well, yeah, I like Pink, but I haven't heard from her in a long time. She hasn't called. She hasn't written. She hasn't done a damn thing, has she?
I heard from her.
But all of a sudden, here's Pink weighing in. American pop star Pink has declared that parents should be able to beat the crap out of their children. The 31-year-old told celebrity news site Access Hollywood the political correctness has gone too far and her own father's beating saved her life. I think parents need to beat the crap out of their kids, Pink. By the way, I think that name Pink was given to her by her father, whose real name is Alicia Moore. She said, I think the whole spanking thing and how it's all gotten PC is for the birds. When asked whether her father, a Vietnam veteran, spanked her, Pink replied, oh, he put me through the wall. It's the only reason I'm still here. It's the only reason I'm still alive. The singer's parents divorced when she was 7. By 9, Pink says she was smoking, and in her early teens, she was regularly taking LSD and ecstasy. She says she was then thrown out of the house at 15. I deserved it. I would have kicked me out when I was 8. I was not comfortable with authority or rules. I was bad. The Grammy winner, whose debut album sold 5 million copies worldwide, has been critical of younger pop stars. Her 2006 hit single, Stupid Girls, parodied the likes of Jessica Simpson, Britney Spears, and Paris Hilton, who gained notoriety through high-profile partying and constant run-ins with the law and promiscuous sex. No, it's, it went, actually, that was Pink with the promiscuous sex.
Yeah, the other one didn't do any of that.
It was, it went from being really funny to really sad, Pink said. It went from just partying and maybe hitting a person or two in a car to having a real problem, and I don't think that's funny because I've lost a lot of friends. Pink said she did all the crashing and burning early. I got that out of the way, and thank God, because I didn't have to do what poor Lindsay Lohan is doing or any of the others, where everyone was watching me screw up, she said. No, you're right. Your father beat the crap out of you away from the spotlight. So that was, so that's Pink, man, laying it on us here. Here is Pink now, as we listen to her best known for the hit song, Get the Party Started. Is this the one?
Yeah, this song's good.
Yeah. All right. Then my dad kicks me through the drywall. Then I take a hit of acid. That's all. All right, so that's Pink. Gooble? Who's Gooble?
That was the guy who was the propaganda minister.
Well, did he start a search engine?
Yeah, Goebbels.
All right, well, would you look up on Goebbels, Pink's latest hit? No, it's Google. They have a polling app that's misleading voters. We're going to get to that. Next half hour. The thing about Pink, man, that I recall, I always liked her because she seemed like a real kind of a neighborhood girl, you know? She seemed like a regular chick.
Yeah, kind of a tomboy and everything with a nice ass. And anyway,
you shut up. Although you're right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so she was kind of a regular chick. Now, her old man beat the hell out of her. Well, good for her. But apparently Lindsay Lohan didn't get that from Michael Lohan. But I will tell you this, Pink, and not that you're listening, not that you would ever even think to listen to this. Oh, that's a disgrace. But anyway, your old man beating the crap out of you and then throwing you out of the house at 15, that's not what anybody calls good parenting. And lest anybody think that what Pink is saying is actual, you know, solid stuff, no. No, 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 no. Beating the crap out of a kid, you see what the beating the crap out of her got?
What?
Well, he beat the crap out of her. She's still smoking and taking acid at the age of 12.
Yeah, but what do you mean? She quit.
No, she didn't quit. She said her old man put her through a wall, threw her out of the house. Obviously, putting her through a wall didn't do anything. Throwing her out of the house was the only thing he could do. She was dropping acid at 12 and ecstasy and smoking cigarettes at 9. Now, what the hell kind of parenting is that?
Yeah, but she said that that her dad, if he had not thrown her out.
If he had not, so in other words, the great parenting that she got was that her old man threw her out?
Yeah.
Well, big deal. How many parents do that?
What are you trying to make it bad or something, man?
It is bad. You know, take Pink saying that her old man beat the crap out of her, then threw her ass out at 15 after she was dropping acid and smoking cigarettes and bad-mouthing. That's not parenting. That's a Vietnam vet who probably had problems of his own, if you'll pardon me for saying, slapping around some kid. She leaves, she hits the street. Only by virtue of her own strength of will and character did this kid turn into something. I think she's given her parents a lot of credit they don't deserve.
You can't say that. Her dad was a Vietnam vet, and she said that he helped her.
Well, I'm saying it. I don't care what she's saying. You tell me this crap is for real, man. Throwing a kid out of the house at the age of 15 is the most irresponsible thing in the world, and I hate it. Thank you very much. I'm Phil Hendry. That's one jackball's opinion. Michelle Bachmann will run for a leadership post in the GOP. So rather than seeing less of her, we're going to be seeing a whole lot more. Lord, Lord, Lord.
Lord, Lord,
Lord.
We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
What's this, bud?
It's a song I really like a lot, too.
Yeah, it's called Don't Let Me Get Me.
Who is this, Pink?
Yeah.
All right, fine. In our next story, we're going to have... Turn it down, man. Turn it down. Great, we're done with Pink, if you'll pardon the expression.
Never done with Pink.
Yeah. Anyway, Michelle Bachmann, I thought we were done with Pink.
You're going to get in trouble one of these days, and people will not go, oh, ha, ha.
Michelle Bachmann to make run at House leadership. House Republicans are beating themselves with ropes and are putting on hair shirts today, having heard that Michelle Bachmann ain't going away anytime soon. Yes, members of the party all over the country are cutting themselves with broken glass and stabbing themselves with penknives. House Republicans have wrapped up one election, but they're getting started on another right away. It's not the 2012 race, but rather the GOP, or as some people call it, the GOP, House Leadership Elections, which will be held later this month when Congress returns for its lame duck session. How do you like your lame duck? It's expected that John Boehner, sometimes pronounced Boehner, will be elected the next Speaker of the House. Unlike what Jason Rantz, our producer, thought, that Boehner would be the majority leader and that Eric Cantor, some snot-nosed punk, would go over Boehner and become the Speaker. Yeah, right, sure. Eric Cantor, what?
He didn't say that, did he?
Yeah, Rantz, he didn't know what he was talking. I think he was feverish from the flu that he doesn't have. Anyway, Eric Cantor, a Republican from Virginia, officially announced he's running for majority leader, and Kevin McCarthy, who starred in the film Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Really?
No, it's got the same name. Anyway, and Kevin McCarthy, Republican from California, put out a statement declaring his bid for Republican whip. But the fourth slot in Republican leadership, the GOP conference chair, may turn out to be the most contested, most intriguing. Representative Jeb Hensarling, a staunch fiscal conservative from Tejas, threw his hat in the ring, his big-ass cowboy hat in the ring, nearly first thing this morning. And aides to Representative Michelle Bachmann confirmed that the two-term Republican is going to make a run at GOP leadership when Congress returns and hold leadership elections later this month. I don't know. I just don't see her as bright enough. You know what I'm saying?
What do you mean, man? I mean, what do you mean bright enough?
She says a lot of dumb stuff, man. All that jazz about the Japanese and, you know, how they, you know, they were put in internment camps because of the census. I mean, all of this jazz that she takes out of the historical record and turns into some large, paranoid Barack Obama Big Brother thing. She's weird, man. I'm telling you. But the fourth slot, all right, we got to that. Let's see. Hensarling, who already has the endorsement of Eric Cantor, has the conservative credentials to lead this incoming group of Republicans. Bachmann has the same fiscal views, however, and she has the Tea Party. Bachmann founded the House Tea Party Caucus and regularly speaks to enthusiastic fans at Tea Party rallies. As a woman, Bachmann would also add a bit of diversity to the male-dominated top of the House GOP leadership team. The conference chair is responsible for unifying and managing the party and working with members to put forward a clear message. The position is open after the current GOP conference chair, Mike Pence, announced today that he will not run for leadership this time around because he can't stand it any longer. No, he said, I've come to realize that it may not be possible to compete an entire term as conference chairman, to complete an entire term as conference chairman, Pence wrote to a colleague saying he and his family are looking to how to serve Indiana in the future. As such, I think it would be more appropriate for me to step aside now, especially since there are other talented men and women in our conference who could do the job better than me. Pence's move adds to the buzz on Capitol Hill that he could be eyeing a presidential or Indiana gubernatorial bid. Whatever.
What's that mean, whip?
The whip is the guy that runs around and kicks ass, literally. The whip is the guy. If you're the Republican whip or the Democratic whip, the minority whip or the, you know, you're in the minority if you are in the minority party. In the House of Representatives now, though, there will be a majority whip for the Republicans because they will be the majority party. Now, this guy, Kevin McCarthy, would be working for Eric Cantor. Eric Cantor is the majority leader. And Cantor would say, all right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to all put on green underwear and walk across the street at 3. You got that, Kevin?
Yes, sir, Mr. Majority Leader.
And all right, now go out and make it happen. And if any of these guys go against me, I want to know who they are, and I'll stick their hands, both of them, into a garbage disposal and then turn it on. You understand?
Yes, sir.
I mean, I'm not saying being serious or anything.
What are you talking about? It sounds like it's bad.
No, but he goes out and kicks ass. See, what you don't understand. So what do you think this is anyway, bud? You think it's some kind of these guys are like, Mr. Smith goes to Washington or something?
The guy's going to stand for what he believes in.
Yeah, The guy's going to stand for what he believes in. That's a hot one. They're going to do what they're told. That's what they do.
Well, yeah, man, because that's politics.
You're damn right that's politics. So some punk face comes in there, some brand spanking new. Who's a new guy? Who's that dumbass that Shepard Smith was talking to today? You know that guy, Jason? Dunham or something? Should have been John Dumbass. Because seriously, this guy did not acquit himself well. Smith says to him, he says, look, you guys know that you got to cut spending, right?
Yes, we do.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, baby. He says, we got a hell of a national debt and a hell of a national deficit. So you guys are going to have to go after the entitlement. Oh, no entitlements, no Medicare. Well, where are you going to go? And this jive ass starts talking about these, you know, programs for the mating cycle of the ring of the, you know, the fruit fly and all of this stuff that if you cut it all out tomorrow wouldn't amount to anything. It wouldn't even make a dent. So Smith was saying to the guy, there's no way you guys can do what you say you're going to do unless you start going after these entitlements. There's no way in hell. It ain't going to happen. And he's right. He's right. And this guy, Mr. Tea Party, Mr. Honest, Mr. Upfront and beautiful and personal, this sack of crap couldn't come out and just spit it out and say it. I ain't saying the guy's a bad guy. I'm not saying it's an easy job.
What do you want the guy to say?
Be honest, man. If you're going to cut spending, and it's going to be something that's going to actually mean something, there's no way you can't cut spending without going after Medicare, Social Security, all the entitlements. You have to. That's how bad this debt and these deficits are. You must. And if there is no cat out there willing to say it, and they don't want to say it. You want to know why? I'll tell you why. Because all of these people that don't like big government, yeah, they don't like big government, but they love that Social Security. That's one hell of a piece of big government. They like that Medicare. That's one hell of a piece of big government. Oh, yeah, they don't like big government, except the big government they like. I'm telling you, folks, this is an insane exercise. When you're listening to this horse dung about how these people want smaller, they want smaller government unless it's big government that they like.
So what's a whip do?
The whip? What do you mean a whip?
The guy that worked for Cantor.
Oh, yeah, the whip. He's the guy that goes and tells these guys what's going to happen. Now, we're voting today, and we're going to vote on X, Y, and Z, yeah? I want all these jackasses lined up. Let's go. Come on. Yes, sir. He runs off, and he lines them up. Now, some of these guys may say, well, I don't know. I don't think I want to vote. If you don't, oh, man, if you don't, let me tell you what's going to happen. You don't. You cannot count on our help. With this, that. Now, you see some of these guys get chewed up and spit out, man. Who was that clown, Massa? Remember that freak?
Oh, yeah, that guy having a tickling contest and everything with everybody out there.
All right, so Michelle Bachmann expected to make a run at the House leadership thing. Let's listen to Michelle here. Chris Matthews was interviewing her. And I think he's got the hots for her. I'm not sure, but it looked to me like he did. It looked like he was licking his lips and staring her up and down like a real sick creep. Turn that stuff off, bud, before I go crazy. All right, here is Michelle Bachmann and Chris Matthews. And this is a 35-second clip, so I hope there's more on it than just him saying that she looks hypnotized. But Matthews wasn't happy that Representative Michelle Bachmann, who won re-election last night, wasn't answering his questions head on.
Guys, woman, Bachman, are you hypnotized tonight? Has someone hypnotized you? Because no matter what I ask you, you give the same answer. Are you hypnotized? Has someone put you under a trance tonight? Did you give me the same answer no matter what question I put to you?
I think the American people are the ones that finally are speaking tonight. We're coming out of our trance. Really, we're coming out of our nightmare.
Okay,
so
well,
I think people are thrilled tonight. I imagine that thrill is probably maybe not quite so tingly on your leg anymore.
I know you
sure
get to that. Your sign holder has already raised that issue.
How about this?
I forgot he was black tonight.
So anyway, that was Michelle Bachman talking to Matthews. Talk about a couple of winners. All right. Meanwhile, Pence's move adds to the buzz on Capitol Hill that he could be eyeing a presidential bid like anyone cares. Jeb Hensarling is not only one of my dearest friends, he's one of the most principled conservative. Okay, so we got the basic lowdown on this thing. We got Boehner, who's going to be the Speaker of the House. Cantor is the majority leader. McCarthy's going to be the whip. He's going to kick ass, or he wants to be. And meanwhile, this thing called the GOP conference chair, which is a very intriguing thing that everybody thinks is really important. We don't know anything about it, and we don't care. So that is that, man. And I made this prediction before the show, and I'm going to make it again.
You're talking about Ford and everything.
Hold on for a minute, will you? Let me get it out.
This is good, man. I thought this was good.
All right. Let me tell you something. You know, I agree that we had to do something to shake it up. There's no question, and I'm glad that that happened. I won't tell you how I voted, but, you know, I wanted to shake it up too. But now let me lay the facts of life on you. Because if people think that they're going to go back to Washington in January and it's going to be a happy fizzies party, I got news for you, man. The President of the United States has a thing called a veto pen. And I understand that there's a thing called overriding vetoes. Now, I've been around long enough to have seen presidents like Ford and Nixon who didn't have anything even close to a Republican majority in either house. They had minorities. Ford couldn't get anything done. What happened to Ford was an interesting thing. Nixon got, you know, he quit. So here's Ford, and everybody thought, well, we'll get rid of, you know, this guy Ford, man. This guy is the heir apparent to, this guy was the vice president of a crook, a criminal. We are the Congress of the United States. We'll see this thing through. The American people have nobody to trust except for us. We will lead. But they ran up against this guy, Ford, who said, no, you're not. You're not going to. What do you think you're going to do? Well, we're the Congress of the United States. And Ford veto, man. I mean, he was laying a veto on these cats as fast as they could send the bills. Then you, of course, remember Reagan with, you know, I've only got one thing to say to the tax increasers, make my day. But see, Reagan had a little bit going for him. He had the Senate, and he had he worked it out with fellow Irishman Tip O'Neill, whatever that means. But now you got Obama. And if you think for 1 minute that they're going to go in there and they're going to repeal Obama's pet project, which is the health care reform, as well as the finance reform, and they're going to say, here it is, sign it. You want to know what's going to happen, don't you? He'll veto. Now, there are people who are saying right now, well, they'll just override it. Really? I got news for you, friend. I don't know what it is. I don't know whether it's in the water or in the air or whether suddenly a veto, when they see veto, they just all of a sudden lose their guts. But a presidential veto ain't an automatic thing to override. It's a very difficult thing for these guys to get around. Now, I know these cats, the Republicans and the Tea Party people, just like the Democrats before them, they thought they were going to go in there and start muscling everybody. Well, you saw how it helped the Democrats. Those guys, they had it all going for them, man. They had the 60 in the Senate. They had the majority in the House. They couldn't do it. They couldn't find their ass with both hands. You never saw a bunch of people so completely and utterly feckless. So now here comes these Republicans. I ain't saying that they won't get a moving. I'm not saying that they're not going to put the fear of Jesus into a few people, but they got the President of the United States sitting there. He's got a veto pen. You know full well Please don't tell me I'm telling you something you don't know, that Obama is going to pull that veto pen out, man, and really put it to work. And then overriding those vetoes will be a very interesting exercise. I'm not saying they won't be able to.
Yeah, but how much don't you have to have, like, a certain number and everything?
Yeah. You got to have some two-thirds. You got to override a presidential veto. You got to have a, I don't know what you got to have, man. What do you got to have, a simple majority? But in any event, it's a very rare thing indeed, man, to override these presidential vetoes. All right, now I wanted to read to you just very, very quickly here the presidential memoirs, A World Transformed. That was Daddy Bush's presidential memoir, My Life by Bill Clinton. An American Life was Ronald Reagan's. Keeping Faith was Jimmy Carter's. A Time to Heal by Gerald Ford. R.N., The Memoirs of Richard Nixon by Richard Nixon. The Vantage Point by Lyndon Johnson. Mandate for Change by Dwight Eisenhower. Memoirs by Harry S. Truman. And The Memoirs of Herbert Hoover.
What about Kennedy?
Kennedy got assassinated, man.
Yeah, he couldn't write them, man, because he's dead.
Oh. Well, somebody else could have ridded him.
Somebody else could have ridded him? Like who, man?
Jackie Kennedy or somebody.
Well, the fact is he didn't write any, man, because he got dead before he could write them. 877-876-PHIL. We'll be back. World famous Phil Hendry Show. 35% of American workers have been bullied at work. Have you been a victim of bullying? Plus, a Google app sent people to the wrong voting booth. Your problem, man, not mine.
It's the Phil Hendry Show. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Yeah, I'd be all over that, you kidding?
Who? Debbie Wasserman Schultz?
I think it's pretty hot.
Man.
Oh, yeah, right. You'd love it.
I'm too much of a gentleman.
You'd love it.
Just shut up, man.
You like that Debbie Wasserman Schultz? Man, you're diseased, man.
Why am I diseased? I think she's hot looking.
Okay, bud, good for you, man. You know, you might want to, if you go ask, get her a toupee.
What are you talking about?
Man, it's like she's got male pattern baldness.
You're insane, both you guys. She's hot. She's hot.
All right, Google polling app misleads voters, sending them to the wrong polling place. Well, I'm so very sorry that happened to you guys. Google can help you research candidates, watch their ads, poke fun at their gaffes, and find out how they did on election day, but the site hasn't exactly fared very well at getting voters to the right polling places. One of the search companies, Election Center Apps, which helps citizens find their assigned ballot boxes, has served up a series of errors that may have sent some voters to the wrong polling places. A study Tuesday by Aristotle, a political technology company, predicts that more than 700,000 households in a collection of 12 battleground states may have experienced errors on the site that told them to head to the wrong polling stations. If you're being sent to the wrong polling place, it's a pretty big deal, especially if it's toward the end of the day, and especially if it's an election that's a closely contested one, like 2010's John Phillip. If you're so stupid that you're relying on a Google app to get you to the polling place and send you to the wrong polling place, boy, what a dumbass you are, said John Phillip, CEO of Aristotle. Aristotle premised its prediction on a series of simulations. The company selected about 1,000 households, at least that's what they told Google, in targeted states. Then they told Google they compared their polling place data against Google's app. Then they told Google they derived an error rate. And then they told Google a bunch of other lies.
You don't think they did it?
I don't know, man. You could do that, though, couldn't you? Okay, here's what we're going to do, Google. Meanwhile, they all went out and golfed. Google spokesman Aaron Zamost said the company worked diligently to fix the problem and make sure it reflects the most up-to-date information provided to us by the Board of Elections. But as you can see, the Board of Elections, they may have their head up their ass. The search engine encouraged users to let the company know whenever they find a mistake in the data, which it has compiled through state election Meanwhile, the guys at Aristotle making off with a bundle of cash on the subcontract from Google, and they didn't do jack. They told Google how messed up their app was, but Google already knew that, and Aristotle is now closing down, locking the door, taking the key, and throwing it into the lake. They don't need the company anymore. What a way to make money. But the mishap still provoked a harsh rebuke from Aristotle.
Google is a great company, but do things well, yes. This is not one of them, said Phillips, without his pants on, as he was folding his slacks for an address later on. We caught him when he was coming off the golf course. I'm sure you understand. All right.
You think she's a Jap?
Who?
Debbie Wasserman.
Don't you ever... Shut up.
You can't say that, man. That's anti-Semitic, or how they say it.
Anti-Semitic.
I didn't say anything.
Yeah, you did. Jap.
I meant, is she from Japan?
Yeah, I'm sure that's what you meant, man.
Is she?
Well, then, that deserves another smack, then, doesn't it? Debbie Wasserman Schultz is not from Japan. In any event, good luck, bud, getting a date from her. Actually, Debbie, good luck getting a date from Bud. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show is produced by Jason Rance, technical director Charles Wagon, our associate producer and screener is Dan Northcraft. Don't forget our website, philhendryshow.com. That's philhendryshow.com for all of your radio comedy needs. Pick up a backstage pass, man. Get with it, baby. No alternative.
Phil Hendry.